Russian state media reporting today U.S.-made missiles have been fired into Russia. Let's go to Joseph Lindsley and find out what the word is from Ukraine. Joe?
Hey, Bob. Well, hello from Kyiv on this 1,000th day of the full-scale Russian invasion of Ukraine. And it's a weird feeling because it's certainly not celebratory. Usually something like this would be a big milestone. But at the same time, it signifies that Ukraine has survived and continues to survive, defying the odds when everyone thought Kyiv, or many people thought Kyiv would fall in 3 days or in a few weeks or maybe a few months. And now for 1,000 days, here we are. Ukraine's still free. Some places have been liberated during these past 1,000 days after having been occupied by Russia and still holding on and still continuing to, speak here about Ukraine every day on WGN radio. And, as I think one important piece of context that's been missed in really most of the reporting about this new permission from Washington for Ukraine to use some of America's best weapons to hit Russians and North Koreans on Russian soil is that it's a very limited permission. It really seems that it's only in the Kursk region of Russia, which the Ukrainians have been in since August. And this is not a new thing, really, because Washington has done this before in limited ways, most notably back in May, after about 3 weeks of a very strong campaign of pro-Ukraine voices, basically begging the White House last May to let Ukraine strike back to protect Kharkiv City, which was then being pounded by the Russians just 30 miles away. And the White House gave permission for Ukraine to use, in particular, the HIMARS missile systems to hit Russians on Russian soil. And at that point, up until that point, Putin had been saying for years, if you ever use any of these American weapons on Russian soil, that he was going to go nuclear. And that was in May. And he didn't go nuclear. And there was, things got calmer and more peaceful, especially in Kharkiv City. That city was on the edge of being destroyed in May, and within 3 days of that permission being given by the White House for Ukraine to hit back, Kharkiv became safer. There were barely any attacks in the month of June in Kharkiv City, and then Russia had time to adapt and to sort of prepare a new strategy. So this is nothing. This is not of a new nature or a new kind, and the headlines are making it sort of more extreme. That and you even see the word that Biden gave permission for these deep strikes on Russia, and that's just not the case. And what's unfortunate about it too is that it feeds into the opposition. So up until 2 days ago, people close to Trump who believed in Ukraine could easily make the case to Trump, look, Biden has been weak on Ukraine, and here's your chance to be the opposite, to be strong. But as of yesterday, as of this permission from Biden, especially the way that the permission was sort of over-glorified to be something much bigger than it is, now the momentum in the world of Trump is to do the opposite of this. It's to say, oh, look, Biden's the one who's going crazy and unleashing Ukraine. And, so Trump needs to do the opposite. Trump needs to try to calm this down. And so it's a strange timing on the optics. And, we've seen this before from the Biden administration. For example, when those hurricanes were hitting United States, Southeast United States in September, that was when the administration chose to release about $8 billion worth of aid, evaluation of old equipment that Congress had approved in April. And the Biden administration waited until almost the same days that the hurricane was hitting. And I think they probably just weren't thinking about the optics of that. But, American people suffering from the hurricanes, and then they hear, wait, $8 billion for Ukraine. And none of the media explained that was not a new, a new sum of money. That was money that was, that was goods for Ukraine, equipment that was already approved many months ago. But no one explained that. And so, and I think we're in a similar situation here where, you go to Drudge Report or something and you think that, World War III is imminent when really every time Ukraine does get this sort of limited permission, it makes Ukraine temporarily safer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Are the Ukrainians going to use this limited supply of U.S. long-range missiles to hold what they've taken in that Kursk region of Russia and possibly use that in a future negotiation?
I think that is a big seems to be a big part of the strategy for sure, because, you know, and that's why, I mean, it was a very creative solution for Ukrainians to take this sort of, you know, sort of heretofore unguarded piece of Russia. Russians were not expecting that. It was, you know, Ukrainians, I think, realized under General Sirsky, the commander in chief, that, you know, they couldn't push back against the Russians, you know, and really they couldn't, they can't do that in Donbass. So they had to do something more creative. So certainly this gives them leverage. It became a bit more tricky with Russia putting North Koreans there. So this permission will help. And as Professor Timothy Snyder, who's been a great voice of, he's from Yale University, about Ukraine, he just pointed out on X, these are actually not long-range weapons. The ATACMS are very precise weapons, and they're great weapons, but they're not long-range. They're short to medium range. But somehow that's kind of completely lost in the mm-hmm. the reporting. And, you know, Bob, today I was thinking 1,000 days. It just sounds extraordinary. But and I was taking my daily run through Kyiv today, and I looked at the nearly 1,000-year-old cathedral, the Cathedral of St. Sophia, the of Holy Wisdom. And that's one of the oldest Christian temples in all of Europe. And down the boulevard from there is another church of St. Andrew, like gold, white, and green. And it's on a bluff overlooking the Dnieper River. And so this, the right bank of Kyiv, sort of the old city, is on these hills and bluffs. And some of them are still pretty wild. You see a lot of nature in the city. And then across the river, it's flat to the east. And, you know, as I stood there looking across the river from the bluff, in the shadow of the Golden Domes of St. Sophia, and you know, to the east is Moscow and Russia. And for 1,000 years, you know, this was a fortification often, but for 1,000 years, the Mongols and people from what was in the Duchy of Muscovy were trying to attack and invade, you know, all those great plains, the great steppes, to try to take this fortress of Kyiv. And Kyiv 1,000 years ago was a place of civilization. In fact, the British ambassador, Martin Harris, noted the other day, it was the feast of St. Margaret of Scotland, who's a big hero in the UK. And her, she was actually the granddaughter of a Kievan princess. So 1,000 years ago, it was like this was the center of European civilization. And the princesses of Kyiv were married off to, you know, the royal families throughout Europe. And so Kyiv was intimately a part of this. And it's many years later then, in 1711, a guy named Philip Orlik, a Ukrainian in southern Ukraine, created a constitution for the Cossacks with separation of powers. And it was the first constitution that had separation of powers. They always were trying to find ways to protect their freedom in these in the wild steppes of Eastern Europe. And the French philosopher Montesquieu, he somehow encountered the grandson of that Ukrainian who created the constitution. And so Montesquieu was credited as the guy that created the separation of powers that we now have in the United States, but actually that was born here in these wild plains. And so as I think of 1,000 days, I think also of 1,000 years of history of people trying to be free. And, you know, in 1991, they thought they got it when the Soviet Union collapsed, and they got through the horrible time of the 90s, and everything really became lovely and pleasant and prosperous here. And now, once again, it's a daily threat.
Yeah, I've been thinking about 1,000 days of the war and our daily conversations here, and how you clear up the news of the day for us. You paint those pictures of what daily life is like in Ukraine. You give us great history. And for my part, I feel so personally connected to you, Joseph, when I'm watching the news and getting the Ukraine war updates. It's so personal for me now because of our connection here. I kind of feel like when I used to hang out at Wrigley Field a lot in the 70s and got to know the Cubs players of that era, all of a sudden I was cheering for them in a whole new way. It was very personal. And of course, as I've said here, my parents are from that part of the world there. And I just want you to know how much we all appreciate what you do here. And I hope this has provided some therapy for you every day.
Indeed it has, Bob. And, you know, it is thanks to you and your dedication. And we can say this emphatically, WGN Radio is the only foreign media that has covered Ukraine live every single day, every weekday for these 1,000 days of war. You're the only one. No one else has done that. Other people left at different times. And so that's thanks to your dedication as well, and to the audience, which has, you know, sent so much support. Many of you who are listening come here to volunteer. and help in so many different ways. So thank you for these 1,000 days. And I don't want to say to the next 1,000. I want to say, you know, we can talk about other things one day, hopefully. But here's to continuing to tell the story of the people here resisting against tyranny, and I think really in that American spirit that we know.
Yeah, nothing personal, Joe, but we want to stop this and get you to Chicago and have a party.
I look forward to that very much.
Thanks. More tomorrow.
Until tomorrow.